Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 96.
Just after the Jerusalem Council, Paul and Barnabas are in Antioch, which seems to have had many preachers and teachers. When it was determined to check on the well-being of the churches they had planted, Paul and Barnabas decided to leave. After the success of the Jerusalem Council and the possibility of seeing their friends again, this should have been a happy time. But sometimes, the very moment that should be the happiest turns into a struggle. We read in Acts 15:36-41, "And after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, 'Let us return and visit the brothers in every city where we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are.' Now Barnabas wanted to take with them John, called Mark. But Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. And there arose a sharp disagreement, so that they separated from each other. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, having been commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches." What do we do when there's disagreement among church leaders? How should we view the church when this disagreement leads to a split? How should we understand those who abandon the ministry? Is controversy a good thing? We will discuss these and other questions today on Theology Simply Profound.
Welcome to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. I'm Bob Terullo. I serve as pastor here at Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me is Rob McKenzie. Rob serves as an elder here at Westminster and is also an MDiv student at Reform Theological Seminary in Orlando. Well, welcome again to another episode of Theology Simply Profound.
Why, thank you, Captain Kirk. I mean, Bob.
Captain...
It's good.
Did
to
it
hear.
Come off that badly?
Asking,
I kind
no,
of like
it wasn't.
Stumbled
it
over
was
my words.
A little
there.
Bit. A little bit. But
I thought I said like welcome Wob. Wob. Like
Wob.
I was like
I've been called
Elmer,
worse.
Elmer Fudd for a moment
yeah.
there.
Hey, ask me what I'm doing this week.
Hey, Rob, what's going on this week for you?
I'm glad you asked. I'm going to be at the Evangelical Theological Society, the conference in Providence, Rhode Island.
Ah.
So if there's any listeners out there who happen to be going to the conference, stop by the IVP booth and say hi.
Say hi to Rob.
Oh, no. This is going to be the whole show like this, isn't it?
What? What am I saying? Am I talking?
I'm going to talk with, like...
Man.
It's been a long day for me. You know that.
I don't even...
You know that. I'm a little tired.
I do not realize I am not.
Well, you are.
Okay. That's on the agenda for today.
That's okay. Everybody listens at double speed anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's good. Well, let us slow everything down.
Well, you know, I think I could probably do that. I could probably do
we
a whole show
it all
like
down,
that.
And then
people listen to it at regular. Then they listen to it like for real. But then they just put it up to four times the speed.
Mine doesn't go four times. Does yours go four times?
I've had a program that went. More
what do we sound like at four times? Let's get some comments out there.
It would have to be
there.
Chipmunks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have to be chipmunks almost at two.
All right. So you read from Acts chapter 15:36-41. What's on the agenda then? What are we talking about? Church splits? Is that what we're talking about?
We are church splits, all sorts of splits. they had this great success in the Jerusalem Council mm-hmm. that there's problems in the churches. They come together. The Presbyterians come in and they discuss the issues. They come out with a agreement and it goes out to all the churches of what that agreement is. This is a great time. Great success. Now Paul and Barnabas are, they're back home. They're hanging out with all their preacher buddies, and they decide they're going to go strengthen. I mean, this, you can almost hear the joy and the optimism as you read it. You know, let us go and strengthen the brothers and sisters in the cities that we preach the gospel. Let's go find the people of God and strengthen them. There's this enthusiasm. And then they have this disagreement.
Right. And Barnabas, like when Paul's saying, hey, let's go. He's like, hey, hey, John Mark, come on over here.
Right. And Paul's going, no, it's not John Mark. No,
I don't think he was saying it in a whisper.
Well, at first he was. I had the transcript.
Okay.
And so at first he's probably, no. And then John, it's John Mark. You know, awkward.
And
Barnabas, of course, had no. I mean, we get what happened. Mm-hmm. John Mark abandoned the ministry. They were going, but they was with them. He was with them. He was supposed to be a help to them, and he left.
Well, he was assisting them, and then he withdrew from them, or he left them.
Right.
Right. So you call that abandonment.
Well, Paul kind of seemed to think it was abandonment.
Well,
he doesn't trust him. He doesn't. It's in the Greek. But Paul doesn't trust him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. It's Barnabas. There's tension there that Barnabas had to be aware of.
Yeah.
Barnabas here, and Barnabas' name is son of consolation and
encouragement.
Encouragement. And he's trying to be a peacemaker. Mm-hmm. He sees that John Mark is profitable to bring with, that he will actually help them as he should have before.
Or at least he hopes he will.
Yeah. Right. He wants to give him that chance, and he probably wants to reconcile John Mark and Paul. And Paul's having none of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it says that he has there's a sharp division eventually.
A sharp division between Paul and Barnabas
right.
as a result of this. Now, there's also the aspect, there's a familial aspect between John Mark and Barnabas. I think they're cousins.
Yes.
However close cousins, we don't know, but it's described as cousins. And so, you know, there's a familial aspect of, hey, wanting to see his cousin do well and to get back on board and move forward.
So it's nepotism.
I didn't know what you're
trying to say. I know there's people who are probably like, well, you guys are being a little too goofy about this.
Well, that's because we're both very tired.
That is true. But I'm also trying to bring it into see it as a real context. It's something that's really going on. This is actual interpersonal relationships between these three men. And we can see these kinds of scenarios happening in today's church.
Right. You're trying to bring it. I mean, like I think a seminary professor would put it this way. Jerusalem Council, you have great unity in the church. And then all of a sudden you have that would be the last unified, truly unified aspect of the church. You know, from this point on, you have division. You have there's unity, of course, in church. We know that. But this shows us that the church is going to be full of weakness. It's going to be full of foibles. It's going to be full of a variety of things that make it split at different times. And this is one of them. And you were described as interpersonal relationships. That's an interesting thing that you do there. You don't see any theological or are they mixed?
Well, I'm not sure what theological issues would be at play here because we're not told there's theological issues.
No.
We're told that this is interpersonal relationship. This is John Mark abandoned the ministry, and yes, that's I'm using.
Yeah,
that
I know,
term.
I know.
But Paul's reaction seems to indicate that that's how he perceived it.
Yeah,
the fact that he and Barnabas end up having a short. It's not like Paul said, "Well, you know, you take your cousin, I'm going to take somebody else. We'll go on. Isn't this wonderful? Now we have two groups of people going out." No, he slams the door and walks out. I mean, a sharp division between him and Barnabas.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's a sharp division? What is the issue for Paul that makes it such a sharp division? What's the heart of the matter that in your mind as you look at it?
Well, again, it is because John Mark did not persevere.
Okay.
He did not stay. He was committed to the work. And Paul, if anybody's going to know that this is a hard life, Paul knows.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we get a list of all the times he was almost killed and maimed and harmed. And I think he was exploded at one point. It's this litany of crucifixion and in the sea. Paul's living a very hard life for the missionary journey. Not all this stuff hadn't happened to him at this
right,
time.
Right, yeah.
But still, we know the dedication of Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paul, to see somebody who has said, I will go with you, I will endure whatever comes my way, and then he leaves. There's a loss of trust that Barnabas wanted to give John Mark another chance.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul, you know, you leave once, I'm not going to trust you again.
Well, not again, because things change.
Well, things change.
Yes.
But we're talking
yeah.
about,
yes.
but you can't read into it yet. You can't go there yet.
Well, I can.
At this, no, you can't. No, at this point,
yes.
Paul's reaction is, I will not trust you again. Now, we know later on, Paul does trust him again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's years later, and we're talking about, you're asking me, what do I think is the theological background of what
right,
is
right.
going on?
Well, I ask you that because some commentators bring in Galatians 2:13
okay.
on this, which is the description of Paul confronting Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the passage also says that even Barnabas was led astray.
Sure.
And so Barnabas is brought in, in the description in Galatians 2, in respect to the falling short about how to include Gentiles into the church. Now, we know this is after Acts 15,
right.
and so that might not be an issue here, but the fact that it is brought up in Galatians 2:13, and that gets in all of the dating of where you
right.
put Galatians in the timeline, and that's a debated issue,
right.
and we're not going to resolve that here. But commentators bring that up, that there might have been more to it than just interpersonal relationships, that Paul and Barnabas weren't agreeing on every aspect of the theological outlook.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that's accurate. I'm just saying that is an issue that is brought up for
right.
discussion.
Well, I have two points as to why I would disagree with adding that mm-hmm. in. One is this is post-Jerusalem Council. If what happens in Galatians or what Galatians is talking about happened before, which I think there's good evidence that mm-hmm. that would have happened before, that would have been dealt with at the Jerusalem Council.
Mm-hmm.
So Barnabas would have been on board with the Jerusalem Council. And Paul and Barnabas are together. They're planning on going.
Yeah.
So that decision was already made. It was the addition of John Mark
mm-hmm.
that's what ends up splitting them up. So I don't think the fact that Barnabas was led astray in the same way that Peter was
mm-hmm.
actually would play into why the division came.
Here. Yeah. I still think there's theology in here, though, and it's more than interpersonal, because interpersonal suggests that Paul just didn't like Mark.
Well, when you say, well, he just didn't like Mark.
Didn't trust him.
Well, he didn't. No.
Right. I know. Yeah, you did say that.
He didn't trust him based on the fact that he'd left.
Right. And that means there's a theological aspect underpinning that. And that is Paul wants someone who's going to persevere. And he's not sure that Mark is the one cut out for that work. So it's not that.
Yes. Well,
right. He's not sure that Mark is the man who can be a good assistant along the way.
Right.
Who's going to be there when Paul and the others need them. And so the suggestion we might get from this, right, if we're trying to learn principles or whatever from this is that, you know, a man's character, the way in which a man has dealt with issues in the past, at least for Paul up to this point, right, suggests that man and the way in which he has handled things in the past, trials, tribulations, will not determine, but will suggest how he might
yes.
deal with things in the future. And that determines whether or not you're going to be called on a missionary trip.
Right.
In some factor or another.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so here's John Mark, who has proven that he was not dedicated at one point. Now, obviously, he's saying, I'm ready to go. Now I'm ready to go. And here's Paul saying, I don't trust you because mm-hmm. you left us. Now, I'll throw it back at you and say, would you trust him?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm on Barnabas or Paul in this regard, because I didn't know. See, I think the difficulty in the discussion here is we only have hints of what happened. John Mark left.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's essentially all we know from, I think it's in Acts 13. Acts 13:13 is the verse. And let me just read. Now, Paul and his companions set sail from Paphos and came to Perga and Pamphylia, and John left them and returned to Jerusalem. But they went on from Perga and came to Antioch and Pisidia. That's it. So right. There's no suggestion that there's anything wrong with what Mark did in Acts. So the description is that he just left them. It's not like he left them for sinful reasons. It's not that he had a weak constitution. It doesn't say that he did this or that wrong. So there's no elaboration right. is all I'm trying to say there. It's not until we get to Acts 15 and what you read that we learn that Paul is upset by the way
yeah.
that John Mark left them. And so we're left without any details,
right.
Trying to surmise what the issue is.
Yeah.
And most would say a lack of perseverance on John Mark's part, such
right.
that the Apostle Paul says, you know what, he's just not ready to go out with us again.
Yeah.
And I can't have him on this journey that I'm about to go on. Such that he's arguing with his last co-laborer,
whoa.
Barnabas, yeah. saying no, and Barnabas saying yes, and Paul says no, and Barnabas says yes, such that they have yeah. to split up. Now, I can't imagine where I would be in that situation. I have no idea. I tend to think I would probably be more on Barnabas' side. Let's give him another chance.
Right.
Because of just the way I've behaved in past situations,
sure.
conciliatory and such. But not knowing those specific circumstances the way these guys did, of course. But even then, they fell on different sides of the issue, both knowing the situation. Right. So it'd be really hard to place myself. Where would you be? I'll throw back at you since you wanted my opinion and I kind of bounced around the situation.
Well, I mean, and I agree with you that in order really to make the concrete decision, you have to have all the facts, and we don't have all the facts. Mm-hmm. But we are given enough to know that John Mark did, he left, he did not go with them to the work, and Paul did not believe that he would be ready to go with them to the work they're about to do.
Right, right.
So there was some concern about his dedication, about John mm-hmm. Mark's dedication. And I'm sure that I'm, knowing myself, I would have been persuaded to take him because Barnabas would have talked me into it. because I would have, just knowing myself, I think I would have said to Barnabas, okay, but if he leaves us again, I'm telling you right now. But Paul, I think we're sitting here in a Christianized or formerly Christianized nation in freedom where we can go to church every Sunday and everything's very civilized. And Paul was going into a very hostile environment mm-hmm. where eventually, you know, he'd be shipwrecked and
right,
crucified
right.
and stoned and all the rest. So taking a chance on somebody for a second time is a lot easier to say in our society. Mm-hmm. So when we have someone that perhaps has left the ministry or walked away from their call, and now they've come back saying, well, you know, I here's the reasons why I left, and I was wrong, and I'd like to come back. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of what I wanted to get into a little bit with bringing this into our context. You know, what we do have. Men that will take a pastorate or a missionary position or a teaching position or something within the church that they are dedicating themselves to, and then they walk away mm-hmm. in the middle where it's kind of unexpected. And how should the church, and when I say the church, I mean the people within that congregation
yeah.
or the people that are relying on that person, how should they handle that?
Wow. I think you're going to have a variety of answers depending on the situation, of course. Mm-hmm. But let's
right. I'm you know and yeah. again. I'm not talking about adultery.
Not right. I'm, let's just yeah. take it for you know just someone who's burned out. You mm-hmm. know, I think the church should be very understanding. It's often considered a lifelong call, but it's I don't think it necessarily has to be the case if someone. I mean, it's, I think, I don't even know the stats. I should have looked them up beforehand, but I mean, I remember hearing a long time ago that, you know, it's just an unbelievable amount of people within the first 5 years, yeah. men leave the ministry.
Yeah. But the average pastor, I think 3.5 years, I think was.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. I mean, I just remember being told that, well, if you make it past seven,
yeah.
you're, mm-hmm. you've made it past the statistical, falling off point.
Right.
And I was like, whew, I did it. now, going into, this will be going into 14 years, coming up in 2018. So if I make it past that, then I'm, you know, so we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. It's the second seven. So, I think churches should be understanding. People should be understanding. People should listen to the reasons. I don't think, I don't think it would be right for a pastor just to walk away without any discussion with his the congregation he's serving, let's, or the leadership. So
let's back up a minute. Yeah. What can a congregation do for their pastor as the years go on to gauge whether or not they're being overworked, burned out, or
that's hard to ask a pastor to comment on something like that, because it often, I think, can come across as self-serving. Like, I mean, a newer thing is, well, it's not newer, but what I've noticed more churches doing is offering sabbaticals for their mm-hmm. pastors, whether or not it is a study sabbatical where it's for a purpose of studying a particular matter and writing on it, or if it's just a matter of pure rest, you know, mm-hmm. like you need downtime, you need to right. rest, you need to be with your family. So there's different ways of approaching that, you know, a 3 month sabbatical or a year sabbatical. You know, there are different congregations that have done different things depending on the situation for their pastor. I've seen it, and it's an academic thing. It's a burnout thing, but I think it's first and foremost through the elders of the church, who have the most immediate contact with their pastor, and can talk about sort of situations in the church, and can speak more frankly to the pastor. So it's a good relationship with the session, I think, the pastor and the elders in the congregation, asking not only the pastor, but also his wife, and if he's married, and if the children are older, the children, to try to gauge and with wisdom that particular man's, you know, whether or not he is tired, whether or not he needs a rest or something like that. So, you know, I think there's proactivity, right, on the part of the session and the congregation to be aware, mm-hmm. be thoughtful. Okay, this guy's been in ministry this long. Maybe we should think this way. Or these things have been going on in his life on a personal level. It could be affecting his ministry, even though we don't see it, his mm-hmm. person, you know. So I think there's just a great deal of wisdom for a session to be concerned in that way. Now, the other side of it is if you have a close presbytery, you know, and I was a part of a presbytery that was a small presbytery, and there was a close relationship between all the ministers who were able to then talk at a pastoral level to each other. Now, when you're part of a larger presbytery or one that's spread out, let's just use that, geographically spread out, like some, you know, smaller denominations like ours are, they get spread out. That's harder to do. So that's where the session becomes a bit more necessary to be more proactive. So that's off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I'll speak from an elder's perspective. I'll speak to the congregation or the people who are listening that are part of congregations. Well, first of all, pray for your pastor on a regular basis. The pastorate is an odd type of job. In one sense, pastors are on call 24/7, 7 days a week. It's just the way it is. They need to be ready to go to the hospital at 2 a.m. And they need to be ready to, you know, if there's an emergency comes up or somebody, there's a crisis with one of the congregants, spiritual crisis, and they're eating dinner, they're probably going to have to talk to them. But the congregation needs to be careful that they don't, that if they can wait till a decent hour, they should wait for a decent hour. Don't try to call during dinner. They want to sit down with their family and eat dinner. So there has to be this caring for the soul of the pastor, even from the congregation. But all that to say that if there is a problem, call. That is why. That is part of their vocation. And for a session, sometimes you have to watch your pastor and see whether or not he's burning himself out. If he's going 12 hours a day where he's barely at home and he's been doing that for 6 months, you probably need to step in and try to sit down with him and figure out how can we reduce your schedule? What can we do? Maybe it's actually telling him you need to take a week vacation. You just need to take one. And let's figure it out. Let's figure out how you can do that. It's not a here's a list of all the things you can do and you just apply this to your church and then it's gonna solve. Right. Yeah. It is like you said, you have to have a good relationship. The pastor needs a good relationship with the session as well as with the congregation. But it does happen where pastors will and this we know this has happened, not just pastors, but maybe interns or seminary students or professors, where they'll just walk in one day and say, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I quit.
Yeah,
and walk away.
And I think, you know, there's a difference between someone who thoughtfully works through a process to say to commit the ministry or mm-hmm. or something, then there's something different than that than abandoning.
Yeah.
Using the word that you use,
right,
and
right.
not persevering. They're just simply they're reassessing their gifts, their life, mm-hmm. And whatever context they're in. I think consider abandoning. Obviously, the language is much more negative, and right. and leaving like even without notice or something. You know, I mean, being in the yeah. pulpit and then walking out,
which I've heard happen.
Oh, same here, right? I've heard the same thing, and
I think the reason why I'm using that kind of language mm-hmm. is because of Paul's reaction.
Yeah,
that there becomes this. They have an argument, mm-hmm. and then there's a sharp division between them.
Yeah,
this is more than just. It's not like there was an emergency back home and John Mark had to leave. I mean, if there was extenuating circumstances that would have given John Mark an excuse, I think we wouldn't see this kind of reaction from Paul, and him. He did not go with them to the work. Seems to be the reason why he left. It was that he did not want to go to the work.
Yeah, and that's what we get here. And I'm gonna make use of Dennis Johnson once again here because he brings out an interesting note on the word withdrawn. Mm-hmm. So you notice that you're referencing it yourself here. It says, but Paul thought best not to take with them one who had withdrawn from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. The language there, withdrawn, Dennis Johnson comments this way. He says, the verb withdrawn from is more negative than the verb describing his departure back in chapter 13, verse 13, where it just says he left mm-hmm. them. In fact, the verb used here sometimes refers to apostasy.
Mm.
So that's where we get a little bit more of the information yeah. to help us identify what that leaving was. So when I was talking earlier, it's like at one point, you don't really know exactly what's going on.
Right.
It's not until you get
right.
to here that you see that why Paul is a bit more negative about this situation. Not a bit more,
yeah.
very negative,
very negative.
About it. And then he goes on. Finally, the mention of the work recalls the start and conclusion of that great enterprise of evangelizing Gentiles in Cyprus and Galatia. Such instability, this is Dennis Johnson's take here, such instability, Paul believed, disqualified Mark from participating in a second mission.
Yeah.
So it's that lack of perseverance, the lack of a stable partner to be able to be of assistance, someone who's sort of up and down and all over the place and unable to maintain a fruitful walk and ministry, especially in the midst of a hostility that they were facing that you see throughout the book of Acts.
Mm-hmm. So going back, bringing back to our situation, mm-hmm. or to our time, if you're a congregant in a church and the pastor gets up and says, this is the last week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving. I've known people that with something like that has happened where they've said, you know what? I'm done with church. Mm-hmm. If this is what, you know, this guy just gets up here, I'd listened to his sermons. I'd been counseled by him. I admired him and he was a godly man. Mm-hmm. And now he's walked away from us.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk away from the church.
Well, I think that's obviously, in my opinion, a wrong response. Mm-hmm. Because we should never hold up any man high enough or so high that his abandonment of whether even if he walked away from the faith should cause us to walk away from Christ's bride.
Right.
Right. The bride of Christ is not just an invisible thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's the organized church that God has established on earth until he comes again. And so to walk away from the organized church is to walk away from Christ. Mm-hmm. And that, I would say, you do not want to do that because of another person's sin,
right,
or weakness. Let's not even call it a sin, depending on the situation. It could be a sin. We don't know this, you know, in this circumstance, it sounds like
we're
this,
not,
right?
Yeah, we're not bringing, that's not what we're talking
about. But the, if someone, is, yeah, well, it'd be, I'd be surprised, right? I'd be flabbergasted. I'd be upset probably.
Sure.
Right.
All but, natural feelings.
Right. You know, we don't want someone else's weaknesses to turn us away from Christ. Mm-hmm. And so we should never, and my first point, we should never elevate a man or anyone so high in our esteem that it would cause us to do that. Mm-hmm. Let's not put our pastors on pedestals.
Right.
Let's love our local pastor. Let us serve with him as he serves us in the various ways that we're called to as Christians. But he's just another guy who's called to this particular ministry. He's no apostle, and he should not be elevated in any particular way other than he serves as minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Yeah. Now, there's an honor that comes with that, of course, mm-hmm. just as there's an honor for a student to a teacher, from a member to a pastor. But that honor should not be elevated beyond biblical principles.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens if later on, so if, you know, someone walks away from the ministry and then 7 years later, they come back and they say, you know what? I'm ready now. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how hard it was going to be, and it was very hard, and I didn't handle it well, but now I want to come back. Should they be allowed mm-hmm. to come back? And how should the other people that are advising them, how should do you think they should deal with that?
Well, this is where I am so thankful for Presbyterianism, right? So what would happen in our context, I would think, generally speaking, that man, if he left, if he, what we call demitted the ministry, meaning he would no longer have ordination, he would no longer be a minister. Well, mm-hmm. if he went back and came back to our denomination, he would have to submit himself to the wisdom of the presbytery again, and counsel with first what we call the Candidates and Credentials Committee, those men specifically given the task of seeing new ministers, which is what this person would be coming back in, and make judgments based upon wisdom, based upon information, knowledge, testimonies of others to see whether or not the man is ready to come back. Mm-hmm. And if there's no, you know, moral failures that would disqualify him from office, then I think it would be up to the presbytery and whatever congregation he was applying to serve to make that decision. But he would need to go through the ringer again, so to speak. Mm. He'd need to be tested again and tried again. And, you know, that's what licensure, as we call it, is. It's a probationary period. And I think he would want to have to go through it again in order to make sure he's not making a mistake.
Yeah, right.
I mean, giving the general hypothetical situations we're talking about, that's
well. I mean,
that's one way.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I definitely want to use a general hypothetical situation because we actually have, I don't think together we know of a situation where this has happened. I think separately we've known of situations mm-hmm. where this has happened. So this isn't that hypothetical. I've watched it happen, and the reactions of the harm that it's caused to congregation, that kind of just it's bad. Now, of course, John Mark was an assistant to the missionaries, and so he was not leading a congregation. But I think it still applies to how we can understand that you know, pastors are and anyone that is going to be in full-time Christian service, full-time ministry in whatever way, missionaries or pastors or, mm-hmm. or anything like that, these are frail human beings that are sinful. Mm-hmm. And at times they're not going to make the right decisions. But we all don't make the right decisions. We all sin, and we all have our failures. Right. And we pray, you know, we look at the 1 Corinthians, where now we're getting into sin here, but the man who was having the affair with his mother-in-law, where first Paul is, kick him out of the church. This is ridiculous. What are you doing letting this man be here? And then later on, it's okay, now bring him back. Restore this one. I mean, there is restoration in the body of Christ, mm-hmm. whether it's because of sin in that case, or if it's a failure in duty. We should look for restoration. We should see. That doesn't mean that, like you were saying, you know, that we don't test someone and say if they're ready for that kind of ministry again. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that we always are on the lookout for helping people who have fallen away for whatever reason to bring them back.
Yeah, yeah. And interesting, I think this is a relevant illustration, and I'm not going to use specifics in this, but there's in the history of our own church on the foreign mission field, mm-hmm. We were working with churches, a church that had a disagreement and it split. Mm-hmm. And one church went one direction, another church went another direction. And we ended up having to work with just one of them. Mm. And then, as I understand it now, in recent years, those two are coming back to be one.
Okay.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. That's the reconciliation that we're just... So you have the split kind of like if we, you know, think of Barnabas and Paul as churches. you know, you have a church split based upon a, as you described it earlier, interpersonal relationships faltering mm-hmm. Because of a man's inability to persevere, his abandonment of his ministry. And if you think of it in those terms, then, you know, you have this church that split because of likely, you know, maybe there are some theological things I'm not thinking about, but interpersonal relationship issues. Mm-hmm. And now they're coming back together and rejoining to have a faithful united testimony. We have the same thing happening with Paul and Barnabas. So they split up. Mm-hmm. Now, they never come back specifically in their own gospel ministry, but we know that there's reconciliation that comes between them, and especially later in 1 Timothy
4:11.
Thank you. Where we see Paul encouraging Timothy to bring John Mark with him because he could be helpful in the ministry.
Right.
What a wonderful testimony of Paul.
It is. And here it's incredible, too, at that point, because here's Paul. He's writing and he's been abandoned. All these people have left him, and some for good reasons. But Paul talks about at one point that all these people have left me. And so now he's asking for John Mark to come. Mm-hmm. Because he's profitable, and it's just incredible that he wants him to come because others have abandoned him, and now he sees that John Mark's become faithful.
Yeah, I mean, there's a complete turnaround in how Paul understands John Mark, and likely because of the way in which Mark has proved himself, mm-hmm. likely in the ministry he has served with Barnabas.
Right. Well, going back to the split.
Yeah.
So we have Paul and Barnabas, and then of course there's a disagreement, and now we have Barnabas and John Mark and Paul and Silas. Mm-hmm. So isn't it great? Isn't controversy great? Now we have two missionary teams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do think, you know, it's men were sinful. You know, we don't know who's at fault. There's no blame put here, right? In the actual split between Barnabas and Paul. We don't know who is quote unquote right.
Right.
But obviously there's a disagreement, and as a result of disagreement, a lack of unity, which is sinful, just right. Therefore, God means for good, right?
Right.
God brings about goodness and his wonderful prosperity of his gospel, not the prosperity gospel, but the prosperity of his gospel as a result of this by broadening where his gospel is going to go, because now he has the two best evangelists that he has.
Super evangelist teams going out.
He had, you know, that were united. Now they're separated, and now he has, you know, the best of both going in different directions.
Well, I think it goes back to what we were talking about, where, you know, you're a congregant in a church, and the pastor, you know, leaves for whatever reason. And there's controversy with that, for whatever reason why he's leaving. And we should never look at that man, even though emotionally we might be torn apart. And that's understandable. There's a feeling of abandonment. There's a feeling of betrayal even. Mm-hmm. And yet we need to look to Christ, because it is Christ who is building his church. And it is not that pastor's church. It is not your church. It is Christ's church.
Yeah.
And so we look to him for his guidance, and he will use even the failures of men and women, mm-hmm. and he will create his kingdom.
Yeah. But we mess up on talking like that all the time, don't we? We often, when we refer to pastors or Wes, you know, the names of churches, we say, oh, right. that's pastor such and such church.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember being corrected by an older, more seasoned minister. He says, no, that's not. That's, what are you talking about? That's Christ Church. And, you know, I was like, oh, you know what I mean. He's like, yeah, I know what you mean. But words mean stuff too. And it's very, you know, it's very helpful to remind yourself, no, that's not such and such church. That's Christ Church. But bring it back just a little bit. I want to go back to Dennis Johnson once, because he has a couple
good
things to say here that sort of review some of the stuff we just mentioned, but bring us up to where we are now. Luke's sparse account invites commentators to speculate about other sources of irritation, Galatians 2:13, to try to apportion blame or even to excuse the rift as resulting from inevitable legitimate differences in priorities. Luke, however, has shown how believers and their leaders can resolve conflicts, maintaining the unity of the Spirit, referring to Acts 15. Wherever the responsibility for the breakdown lay, this breach between brothers was inexcusable. Barnabas's mentoring of Mark eventually restored Paul's confidence, but that is not to say that Paul was wrong to consider Mark unprepared for the rigors of mission so soon after his failure. Without justifying either disputant, Luke shows how the sovereign God advances his kingdom through his flawed servants. God doubled his workforce as Barnabas and Mark set sail for Cyprus, while Paul enlisted the Judean prophet Silas and took the overland route to the northwest, visiting the churches of Syria and Cilicia. That God uses sinful servants never excuses our sin, but it always glorifies his grace. Hmm. It was that last bit. That he uses sinful servants, but that doesn't excuse our sin.
No.
Right? But it always glorifies his grace. That just, you know, made me smile.
Well, the last thing I think we should go over is, what do we say to the John Marks out there? Those who have maybe not necessarily been, you know, we've been talking about pastors, but even them that have walked away early on because it was hard, or seminary students who have dropped out, but still have that kind of that tug, you know, to maybe go back, but, you know, are just unsure. What can we say to encourage them?
Well, it's always, you know, the situation, you know, maybe that person is not meant to be mm-hmm. in the gospel ministry. You know, if you have so many guys falling out of the ministry within 3.5 years, mm-hmm. well, maybe that's because they shouldn't be there, right? There shouldn't be guys in the pulpit ministry that are there. Mm-hmm. And the qualifications aren't held to, you know, so there's a great deal of assessment going on with this mm-hmm. person, the gifting of the person, their calling, and so on and so forth. So maybe that person isn't meant to be there. Okay, good.
That's okay.
Right. Yeah. And that's perfectly fine. God uses his people in all different sorts of ways.
Right.
You know, you don't have to be a minister to glorify God. You don't have to be an elder. You don't have to be a deacon.
No. You just have to be a faithful member of the community.
There's a general call of office to all of God's people and serve wonderfully, serve faithfully. And in doing so, you will be an encouragement to your elders and your pastor. but for those guys that like have been in the ministry and then get, you know, pulled down, you know, the weight of it, I think, you know, maybe they need a break and maybe they need rest. And during that time, you know, receive some counsel. That counsel could come from other ministers, other elders, could come from their wife. Okay. You know, it could be a variety of different things, but to encourage them, especially if that guy is known to be a called minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, encourage them, counsel them, give them rest. Let them sit under the means of grace. Let them be ministered to and refreshed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then come to the conclusion of when they're ready to come back.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe they won't be, but maybe they will. You know, it's hard for me to say one way or the other.
Right. Well, and for just a general call for all believers that endeavor to do organization things for the kingdom of God, whether it's starting a Christian school or planning a church, helping with that, or a counseling ministry, or any type of ministry that they're going to be involved in. Not even necessarily, I'm not talking about a full-time vocation. I'm saying that anything that you and other Christians are going to do, they're going to get together and they're going to start something to glorify the kingdom of God. Consider the cost. It's work and it's sacrifice. And if you believe this is what the Lord is leading you to do, starting a rehab center or something like that, that you're going to have in association with the church that is going to be staffed by somebody that maybe will be full time or maybe just volunteers, you always have to consider the cost, and that's something I think that often isn't done. There's people that will say, "Oh, isn't this great? Let's do this. This sounds like a great idea." And their heart's in the right place and they mean well and they love people and they love Christ and they want to see good things come to a community. But they don't take the practical steps of considering the cost of the work it's going to be. And so before you enter into anything, any kind of endeavor, you need to say, "Am I dedicated to this?" And sometimes, unfortunately, it takes the actual working in that endeavor to make you realize this is not for me.
That happens.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
It really is okay because we do all things for the glory of Christ.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us. We hope you enjoyed this discussion of the latter portion of Acts 15. We're a podcast of Reform Forum. And find out more about us, go to reformforum.org. We're a listener-supported podcast. Through Reform Forum, you can go to reformforum.org/donate to find out how to keep this and other programs going. And we do appreciate your support. To find out more about the congregation we serve, go to westminsteropc.org. And if you're in the Chicagoland area and want to find a great local church, go to chicagoreform.org. So, Rob, what's up next time on Theology Simply Profound?
Next time, we're going to talk about how we should close all of our churches and just do street preaching.
I see.
Yep.
Well, folks, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.